Hi there, it's Davinia here, and this season we're proud to be partnering with Nosso, an awesome new app created to help parents invest for their children's futures with the support of their close family and friends. Nosso offers investment products like junior stocks and shares ISAs, as well as general investment accounts and much more. They make gifting from family and friends super memorable with messages and photos, which means any money you gift on behalf of children has a lasting legacy. Just remember that as with all investing, your money is at risk. You can find out more about Nosso via the link in the show notes. Enjoy the episode. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers, those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today, I'm brimming with excitement to be joined by Abby Wright. Abby is co-founder of Festival of the Girl. She's also a gender equality activist. Festival of the Girl is essentially a movement designed to empower young girls to become confident young women. Obviously, a topic that is very close to my heart. Abby, thank you for being here with us today. Why don't you introduce yourself for the benefit of the listeners?
Okay, well, thank you so much for having me. I am thrilled to be here today. As you said, I'm Abby. I co-founded Festival of the Girl in 2019 with Laura and Jen. And I am just doing everything I can to try and create a more gender equal future for our girls and our boys, of course. But I have mm-hmm. two girls, so that's what comes to mind straight away for me, but it's also for boys.
Absolutely.
And we have our festival coming up, so it's a really fun time for us.
And it's really timely that we're speaking. Exactly as you say, Festival of the Girl takes place on the 9th of October in London. So we'll share more information about how you can get tickets for anybody that would like to join. That's going to be a really special day. But Abby, one of the things that you've just said, which is about, you know, creating a more equitable world for girls, but also boys, can you elaborate on that a bit further? Because I think sometimes in discussions around gender equality, irrespective of age group, I think, you know, men and boys can be left behind in the conversation. And I always, you know, it always strikes me that there's a real danger that in excluding, or perhaps, maybe excluding isn't the right language, but, you know, if they are not part of the conversation, then we will find ourselves in a bit of chaos in years to come. So can you expand on, you know, your thoughts around that a bit more?
Yeah, of course. And you're absolutely right. They have to be part of this conversation. What we find with our festival is, and we are still learning, we're 4 years in and we are still learning about how best to create the best festival that has the most impact. But we've said from the beginning, we have created this festival with girls in mind. That is what we're thinking about when we're creating it. We are three women, all three of us have daughters. But we invite boys to come along too. Now, mm-hmm. we appreciate that some boys may look at it and think, Festival of the Girl, I don't want to come to that. That's fine. But for some of those that are open to it, let's get them along as well. Let's get them seeing those female role models, watching their sisters get involved in gaming and football skills, whatever it might be. It's just as important that they see that. But we also, in regards to our festival, struggle a bit thinking, well, if we suddenly had lots of boys there, would that then make girls less likely to get involved? So we are always slightly back and forth about the best way to create our festival for both girls and boys. But you're absolutely right. They have to be part of this conversation. And a lot of the time, you know, there's been some research done recently by a couple of men actually in Ireland. I say men, they're in their late teens and they're actually going to be at our festival this year talking about it.
Oh,
but
brilliant.
One of the things that they did was they were going into schools and, for example, and lots of people have heard about this, asking both boys and girls to draw a picture of a firefighter. And in this case, it was 60-something% of boys drew men, whereas only 40% of the girls drew men. So the girls were starting to draw more female firefighters than the boys were. So again, we are in many ways speaking to girls. We are showing them all these incredible role models, what they can do, where women haven't been before, but where women can be, where they can be. But we need to be showing it to the boys too. They need to understand that as they grow up as well.
Absolutely.
So we do try and do that. But also on the other side of things, we talk a lot as well. And you know, it's not something we have the capacity for or the funding for to do at the moment. But we talk about what a Festival of the Boy would look like. Mm-hmm. We do our Festival of the Girl in October because it's International Day of the Girl on the 11th of October. But it's also International Day of the Boy on the 16th of May, which very few people know about. And I don't really know anybody that celebrates that. So, but a Festival of the Boy would look very different to a Festival of the Girl, which is, for the girls, you know, we've got loads of different activities from, you know, mechanics to gaming to sports to resilience and confidence, all these things where we know we want to engage girls because it's areas where it's lacking in women in the future, or it's areas where girls have issues, for example, body image. But with boys, it would look really different. Would it, you know, how would it look? It would look more about men in roles, for example, in caring roles or nurses, for example. It would be talking to boys about their allowing them to feel these different range of emotions. So straight away, that would look very different. And would that then be appealing to boys? I don't know. There would be some clever way to do it. And although if we were to create it, we wouldn't want to run it. We would need men running it, you know, for them
yes.
to. So yes, the answer is we have to be talking to boys. We have to have the men involved in this conversation. It's just, it can be difficult sometimes. And I think we just try and take it day by day and see how we get on with that.
Yeah. I mean, there are a few things in what you say that, you know, I'd just like to almost highlight and delve a bit deeper into, because one of them, you know, in thinking about some of the how the shape of a festival for boys might look in contrast to a festival for the girls. I think that's a really important conversation, because I think sometimes in discussions around equality, nuance can become lost. And I think whilst, you know, we live in an age and an era in which people are so careful not to offend and so worried about being cancelled on social media or saying or doing the wrong thing that might offend certain groups, the unfortunate byproduct of that is that we don't permit ourselves to have really open, frank conversations around the way things currently are, yep. what utopia might look like, and some of the steps that we might take to get there. And so I think it's really important to be able to say, you know, currently we have a situation in which, you know, as that, you know, that study has alluded to, albeit in a, you know, a small way, that actually there are still certain attitudes and beliefs that are held by boys as a result of their socialization and a number of other contributory factors that might mean they don't view women or they don't view their female classmates in a certain light, in certain careers and certain roles. And if you've got this kind of tension between young girls increasingly seeing themselves in any kind of career path, but if they're coming up against, you know, in the adult world, boys that have never been conditioned to believe that women can do those roles, then already you can see the potential for, if not conflict, but then at least a little, you know, a bit of friction, a bit of tension. And then the other part of it is, you know, to what extent can and should people outside arguably excluded groups, to what extent should they be viewed as or be seen as representatives of a certain debate or conversation? So, you know, you were talking about, you know, the two young men that have done that study, which sounds brilliant. And I'm really looking forward to meeting them on the day and, you know, talking about the different attitudes and beliefs. And that's one conversation. But then, you know, in other areas, you know, as you discussed, you know, if you were doing a festival for boys, then you would want to make sure that you've got male representatives there who could, motivate, uplift and champion young boys and also understand some of the specific challenges they face. I suppose the question that I'm coming to around all this is, why is it in your mind so important that we separate these, you know, these broad, you know, generic genders, if you like, and focus and hone in on the specific issues that they might face. Why is it so important that, that these groups are represented by people that also have faced similar experiences and can therefore relate to what some of the challenges that young girls might face?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? I think it's something I think about a lot in this idea of separate, you know, we have created Festival of the Girl. And like you say, we do come up against people saying, but what about boys? What about those young kids that, you know, aren't identifying as a girl or a boy at this point, or aren't sure what they're doing, you know, and we're obviously very specific girl because it's in the name, it's Festival of the Girl. We are thinking about girls when we create it. But we still need to, I think, just look at our society, mm-hmm. And look at the areas where we don't have enough women, where I mean, it's still such a patriarchal society. We do still need these initiatives for girls. Yes, don't get me wrong. I would love to be in a world where it could be called Festival of the Future or Festival for the Young People, whatever it might be. It doesn't sound quite as snappy, but we have to keep speaking to girls. And although we do have men coming into Festival of the Girl running some of the stalls, the reason we want those women there is because role models are so powerful. It is so true. You have to see it to be it. It is so true. We've got a wonderful woman called Cleo coming. She's a motorsport mechanic. And she said she would be much further along in her career now if she had ever believed she could have done that. She just never thought she could be a mechanic within motorsports, even though she looked at it and went, wow, that's amazing, because she never saw a woman doing it. So there need to be women for young girls to see, or people like themselves for young people to see, to be able to believe that they can do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if that really answers. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you. I mean, it's one of the challenges that we have come up against, or I personally have come up against from people, particularly in the early days of Raincheck, less so now, but it's still a conversation that needs to be had. And it's one in which there is criticism that's leveled at anybody that's doing, or that's seeming to target a specific group, a gender, an ethnicity, in that it's viewed as divisive or, you know, excluding of other people. But exactly as you say, we live in a very patriarchal society, regardless of, you know, and there've been, don't get me wrong, of course, there've been great strides that have been taken in recent decades, but we still live in a very patriarchal society. And I think it would be disingenuous to pretend that there isn't a need for female focused initiatives, whether it comes to finance, as in the case of Raincheck, whether it comes to, you know, confidence and careers, you know, like the work that you were doing with Festival of the Girl. But ultimately, it's really important that we are honest with ourselves about the reality, and that we don't try to obfuscate the facts by shouting really loudly that, oh, you know, well, what about me? You know, I feel excluded and therefore I have to be part of this conversation. Because I maintain that not every conversation is for everyone. And sometimes for the people that are not being targeted by a particular initiative, actually the action there is for people to kind of take a step back and learn and listen and see how they might be able to participate or contribute to the solution.
I mean, absolutely. I couldn't agree. You worded that so beautifully. I think, but it also makes me think that we do need to create safe spaces as well when we are talking about issues that are difficult. And for, I think of us when we're women, we realise the issues with gender inequality obviously much more than you do when you're in primary school, although don't get me wrong, they are very aware. But you realise it much more, you see how it's impacted you in every aspect of your life, and actually finding a place where there are only women to talk about certain issues can really help. That can create a safe space, people really understand it. But, you know, so it's not that we only want those spaces, but I do think that sometimes we need them. We need them.
Yes.
And I also think, and like I said, this is something we come up with when we talk a lot about boys coming to festival with a girl. I think if we got up right now, as you can imagine, not that many boys do come, although my nephews always come, which is lovely. And we do encourage boys to come. But I question in the future, let's say we got to the point where it's 50-50 and we had 50% girls and 50% boys. We like to have a sports area to encourage girls to sort of get more excited about sports or to see some of the sports out there that they might not have known about before or have seen many women take part in. Now, if you had a lot of boys there, would they naturally go towards the sports section? And would that potentially then put some of the girls off doing that? So, you know, it's a tricky one, but we're not trying to, you know, by creating these things, the work that you do, the work that I do, it's certainly not about excluding anybody. It's simply about creating a space for learning and for a space where you can be yourself. I think that's really key, isn't it?
It is. Completely agree. I mean, one thing that you touched on there was around, you know, the extent to which primary school age children, primary school age girls would be aware of some of the issues and some of the potential obstacles that they might confront as they go through life. And of course, Festival of the Girl, almost similar to Rain Check, it's one of the reasons why I love the work that you do so much. It's less about focusing on the challenges and saying, you know, these are all the problems you're going to face. Of course, it's important that we're able to, again, be very candid about some of those challenges, but then to kind of craft the solutions in such a way that gives women and girls agency around this is what you can do to overcome it. These are some of the tools and techniques that you might deploy in your own life to mitigate some of the challenges. So I guess, you know, Festival of the Girl is, you know, one solution. It's a great contribution to being part of the solution. But before you got to Festival of the Girl, what were some of the contributory factors that you'd identified that you felt were leading young girls to maybe present a lack of confidence versus boys? Or, you know, what were some of the different attributes that you face or that you recognised that young girls were facing?
Well, I think, to be honest with you, it comes back to me personally. When I look at the life that I've led, and it's very much easier to reflect, isn't it, when you get a bit older, mm-hmm. and you have children, especially looking back and seeing, and it's interesting as well because I'm one of two children, and I have a brother, so it was very much boy girl in our household, and I look back at my need for people to like me, my need to be perfect, my fear of failure, my people pleasing, all of these things that are pushed on girls much more so than boys. This need to be sweet and to look a certain way. All of these things are put on young children from the moment people realise they're a girl and they're a boy. And half the time people don't even realise they're doing it. And I think I've been able to look back now on my life and see the detrimental impacts that that has had in my personal life, in my career. And I couldn't really put words to it. I'm still learning, but it wasn't until I had my first child. And I genuinely did think I was going to have a boy. Everybody was, you know, as everyone likes to tell you what you're going to have.
Yes, for some reason, everybody, I was the same.
Everyone just thought, said to me, didn't think, sorry, said to my face, you're definitely, oh, you're carrying a boy, you're blah, 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 blah. And then I had a girl. And funny enough, she was born on the 8th of March, which is International Women's Day. So double empowerment there. But I think
brilliant.
It really brought home to me, well, my goodness, now I'm bringing raising a girl. I need to reflect on what's impacted me negatively and look at the world around me. I've worked in some really different places. I've worked in the performance industry. I've also worked within offices, and I worked for a very big football club, very male dominated office, obviously, and club. And it was only after I had my daughter that I looked back at all of those spaces and just saw how they weren't created for women and how it was still such a struggle for women, how I could never voice my opinions or have the confidence or even know what my opinions were. I'd almost even forgotten how to think for myself in many ways, because I spent my whole time being like, well, whatever anyone else thinks, we'll just go with that, you know, keep the peace. So it's, and then you start to look at the research and you start to read the books and you start to talk to other women. You start to, my nieces are a bit older than my daughters, so start to watch your nieces and the young women in your, young girls in your life. And it becomes much clearer the impact gender stereotyping is having on girls and boys, but in this situation, girls, and that we have to be speaking to them as soon as possible. And I think what you said, which is so right, is that, yes, we need to create the space that shows them how it can be, that gives them the tools, but in a way, it, we're sharing what the challenges are, but with... but with the tools and almost the fun of the ways that you can help it. So it's not this sort of depressing, oh, by the way, men and women aren't going to have equal pay for what is it, over 250 years, which when we ran a workshop this summer and it was because we went to Camp Festival with the, our Festival of the Girl. We ran some workshops and one of the games we played was a dates game where the girls had to work out dates and they had to sort of run around and do all these fun things. So it's very high energy, fun, exciting, but also had these really important dates. And one of them was men and women not having equal pay. And you should have seen the faces of these young people because it was girls and boys. They just couldn't comprehend it. They were, and the boys as well, they're a bit like, why don't they have equal pay? What? Why is it going to be 250 years? You know, they just, it just sort of almost blows their mind. So it's, we want them to know this information, but we also want to be like, but there's ways we can change it. Let's do it together. Let's, so it's uplifting, it's fun, it's exciting, at, you know, at the same time. So yeah, so I think, so in answer to your question, I think the challenges arose because I saw them in myself. I then had two daughters and you just, the minute your eyes, you become aware, you just see it everywhere, the gender stereotyping, the impact it's having, and the need for things like my festival, but also things throughout the year, you know, the need for it to be in primary schools is whatever it is. There's a great charity, for example, called Lifting Limits UK. They create, go into schools and help the schools to create their curriculum. So it is more, you're taking away the gender stereotypes. It's got to be, and the parents talking about it at home, it's got to be everywhere. Yes. To really make an impact, which is hard.
It is hard. I mean, there's so much that I can relate to in what you say, Abby. I mean, I went to a girls' school. So, you know, some of my earliest reflections, you know, I, obviously there were no boys, you know, in our classrooms with whom we were competing or sharing ideas or, you know, viewing one another through the lens of being, you know, an adolescent and, you know, everything that goes along with that. But certainly, you know, I definitely recognize the, you know, the beginnings of some of that conditioning, and the need for, and it could be that it's just, you know, we were real nerds in my class and, you know, my group of friends were real perfectionists when it came to our learning and always wanting everything to be right and, you know, devastated, you know, the levels of hysteria and devastation if things weren't quite right or you've lost a mark. And, you know, as I say, some of these things will be common across genders. You know, of course, there are high performing and high achieving boys that are very conscientious about their work too. But it was only when I got into the workplace and I saw, or even at university, when I, obviously you're in, you know, it's co-ed university, and I started to observe the behaviours of teenage boys and then kind of early 20 something young men around their approach to learning, around their approach to even delivering presentations, group work, the way they would naturally lead, the way they wouldn't, you know, give a second thought to whether or not they had the answer right or wrong. They just felt confident enough to proffer an opinion. And they didn't really care if that opinion was knocked back by the professor or if it was wrong. They would happily offer another opinion. Yeah. And I, you know, when that has basically carried through all the way through my career and, you know, working in the financial services industry where you've got lots of testosterone, these big personalities and alpha males. And it's interesting that for women that work in those environments, whether it's through a sense of survival that actually, you know, in order for me to succeed here, I have to emulate some of these arguably more masculine traits, or whether it's just their natural personality, which of course would be fine too. But the way those women are viewed by society at large is often really unfavourable compared to men who exhibit those same behaviours. And so for me, that was one of the areas that I really started to see. And I guess in my case, you know, when you overlay that with, you know, not just being a woman in finance, but then coming from a certain ethnicity, which will also have, you know, a certain set of stereotypes around it, around our level of assertiveness, our level of outspokenness, for example, as well. And so you start to see it can feel really like a pressure cooker with all of these things kind of, you know, swimming around and you as a woman having to navigate it all. And so again, we come back to this point about when we think about diversity and you see across the city, you know, in lots of industries, all of this work, all of this investment into diversity and inclusion initiatives. But then you think, well, actually, what are the practical things that would need to happen in order to make women feel more confident, more comfortable in these spaces, yeah, and to shrink their personalities less?
And I think it's a funny one. It's, you know, we hear this all the time, saying that women need to be more confident. I feel like I hear, and it's true. I mean, I would, you know, I'm working on it every day to try and be more confident so my girls see that confidence and hopefully have it within them. But, you know, I've heard about so many women who've gone into reviews at work and have just got one of the feedback points is be more confident, be more confident. It's, and like you say, it's not about, yes, okay, we as women can work on our confidence, but like you say, it's looking at the world around them, it's looking at the office around them, it's looking at the people around them that is going to make some of the difference here. Because if they suddenly come around and go, okay, I'm going to be more confident and I'm going to be more assertive, then they're going to get put down because of being that way. So it's, you almost can't win. And just another point to what you're saying, I think, and I don't know how you've come across this, but something I find quite frustrating is you hear about these big organizations who are investing in diversity and equality, and yet the amount of times they ask people to come in and run workshops for free is shocking. So the money isn't there. They are investing, say, a bit of time. So it looks, and for me, that says a lot. I think if they're turning around and asking people to do, you know, workshops and help with these things and run them for free, then that's not true investment, is it? And it's sort of
it's horrific.
It is, isn't it?
And
it's the big organisations that have the money to invest that aren't, not all of them, obviously, some of them are amazing, but I've certainly come across a few who've expected it to be for free and you're just like, no.
Yeah. I love that you've raised this point because, of course, again, it's such a hot topic at Raincheck. It's something that I discuss with the Rainmakers all the time. And of course, there are so many business owners, freelancers, entrepreneurs, people that have side hustles as part of the Rainmaker community. And the feedback that I hear almost universally from them is that, and of course you'll see there are peaks, there are spikes in terms of when they will be flavor of the month, of course, around International Women's Day, perhaps around Mother's Day sometimes, if there's a new piece of research, and they'll be invited to come and speak on various topics. And they'll be really excited and they'll put together this amazing presentation and they'll be having these conversations. And quite often even they will be hesitant to ask the question about money because sometimes they are approached. And there is never in that approach, or there is rarely in that approach, a discussion around what is your fee? And then as soon as you raise that, you know, this is my speaker's fee, suddenly there is no budget and that they would love for you to come because they love the work that you do. And you think to yourself, well, if you love the work that I do so much, why don't you see a commercial value to it in terms of how it might impact not just the individuals that will participate in that workshop, for example, but the culture of your business. And I mean, if you think about the culture being the glue that holds the business together, then what does it really say about your actual genuine commitments to diversity and inclusion if you're not willing to pay for the expertise of someone that lives and breathes it every day?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it says everything, isn't it, if they're not willing to?
Absolutely. Pay. So, I mean, Abby, just being really specific now, and this is an exercise, because again, just like you, I've got two daughters and, you know, I've done a lot of self-reflection over the course of my career. And in my case, it was less about how to be more confident and more assertive, but the feedback that I would receive for a multitude of reasons, including, as I said to you, you know, not just being a woman, but being a Black woman, the feedback that I would receive would be about be less straightforward, Dav. Maybe think about how you can flex your style and be more, you know, all of these different things that arguably are just associated with being a passive woman in my mind. Yes. Yep. So anybody that does have an opinion, however respectfully that opinion is delivered, it will always be viewed through the lens of antagonism. So, you know, but when I became a mother and having daughters especially, you know, I was very, suddenly you become even more laser focused on what are some of the things that I really want to make sure that my girls are learning and what kinds of behaviors do I want to model? So for example, in my case, whilst it's less about, you know, modeling confidence is not something that I need to think about, you know, with my older daughter, and it's very interesting, I don't know whether you find this, but with my older daughter versus my younger daughter, the younger one is really assertive, outspoken. Mm-hmm. She's a yep. real extrovert. She will happily tell you what she thinks and she doesn't care. Very loving too, but she is very much the kind of, she's got a really big personality mm-hmm. and she doesn't shrink. And so everything that we do in the home, you know, myself and her dad to nurture her is around, in, you know, giving her permission to be more of herself. So not stifling her in any way.
Yeah.
With her older sister, it's more about, you know, she's quietly confident. And so for her, it's more about bringing her out of her shell and making her feel comfortable enough in all environments to speak her truth and to offer her opinions without fear of being told that it's wrong. So that's something that we're working on with her. But the behavior that I need to model from a personal perspective with them is about rest mm-hmm. and about not pushing myself off a cliff and not feeling like I've got to be in charge of everything and I've got to be responsible for all the things. You know, there is a lot of research and there's a lot of debate quite often on social media about being an immigrant daughter or being the eldest woman in an immigrant family and what that means. I mean, my cousins and my younger sister are actually far more pressured on this than I am. I actually have managed to dodge a number of bullets when it comes to that, but certainly there are a number of expectations that are attributed to different cultures around what it means to be a woman. Mm. And one of the expectations that I have absorbed and which I'm trying desperately to fling off now is not so much quite how hard I work, but that if I ever have any downtime, that it's idle time and that I need to be filling every second of every day with work, yeah. with meaningful work. That if I pause, it's because I'm lazy and that mm-hmm. there's something that needs to be done. And so my mind is never still. I never switch off. I don't think this is something that is unique to Caribbean families.
Yeah.
Abby, what is it in your household, you know, when you think about some of the behaviours you're trying to model for your daughters, what do some of those things look like?
Ross, I mean, it's very, very similar to yours. Interestingly, my youngest is only two, so we're still getting to know each other. But she, you know, you can already tell she is feisty. Mm-hmm. She uses her voice, and there's just this inner confidence, you know, to climb to the top of the tallest climbing frame, even though she's two.
That's so sassy.
Much there. I know. Love it. Whereas with my eldest, it is very much about helping her with her inner confidence. And very similar to yourself, helping her to find her voice and to not and feel she can speak up. And so I know for me, I see that very much. I was very much like that as a young girl and still working on it as an adult. So I do know very much for my role modeling for her, it does need to be that confidence. It does need to be allowing her to speak up, and when she does speak up, to really listen. I think that's the thing. But I think one thing that what I would say about the rest, I think, is really, really important. I think especially when you work for yourself, it's very easy, because I want to show my daughters that I'm working for myself, that I'm creating this path, that I am trying to make a difference, and I do work hard. I'm a hard working woman as well as their mum, but I don't want to work myself into the ground. I don't want that. There is this norm, isn't there, around the busyness, and actually you're really a success when you're just killing yourself, which we don't want to teach that to our kids. That's crazy. We want them, you know, I want to be able to have downtime with them, but also downtime to look after myself and for them to see that. So it's very similar to yourself. The only other thing that, and again, it's something I need to work on, but I want to for my girls, is this idea of the ability to debate, which really is the ability to communicate, which I think we're losing in our world, especially with social media. Mm-hmm. The ability to have the confidence to put your opinion forward, to then be able to listen to how the person reacts to that, or maybe their opinion is different and they share their opinion. And then for you to be able to say, okay, I've shared my opinion, I've listened to yours, I've thought about it, and I think this is how I want to move forward. Whether that's, I believe, I still think that my opinion is what's right for me, or actually you've made me think of it in a different way and I think that's interesting, maybe I could think that way going forward. It's this ability to simply have the confidence to say what we think, to listen to the response, and then to go away with what we think is the right way. And trust me, I need to work on that very much. I think especially when it comes to things like the work that I do, the work that you do, where it comes to gender equality, when you're speaking to someone that almost doesn't agree or doesn't understand why you do the work you do, I find it very hard to listen. I just want to shout at them and be like, well, look, have you not seen the stats? Do you not see the world around you? No, I need to just have the confidence. And I think for me, I would love to get better at that, to bring that into my home so the girls could have those skills when they grow up too. I think it's, you don't really see it. So even on TV, you watch, you know, Prime Minister's Questions, or you look in the House of Parliament, they don't even listen to each other. They just shout across at each other. There's no real communication. So I think for me, and I think it's just as important for boys, but I think for me, for the girls, is how can we help them with this incredible skill and confidence that I think will just help so much when they grow up. So, but I need it for myself as well. So I need to work on it too.
Yeah. Well, it's like a lifelong journey, isn't it? So yeah. At the same time as us teaching our daughters, we're having to, you know, I have to physically force myself and put it into my calendar and do all sorts of things to make sure that I take a break. And even when I'm taking the break, my mind is constantly racing. So it really is. It's an exercise that, you know, I'll probably have to be, you know, have to undertake for the rest of my life. But at least I'm committed to the journey.
Absolutely.
But Avi, you know, one of the things that we love at Raincheck is receipts to back up everything that we're saying. And we love data and we love research. And you share some brilliant information in bite-sized chunks via your Instagram up around, you know, some of the feelings that young girls might be having, and the, you know, the gap in terms of confidence between boys and girls. I mean, can you share any stats or any data or research just to help, I guess, give people some context around what we're really up against?
Yeah, of course. I think the first one that always pops to mind was some research done in the US, which said that by the age of 6, girls already think that boys are really, really smart and are much smarter than them. And that's by the age of 6 that's already come in. So what, they've been at school for 2 years, a year? No, but just a year, isn't it? You're 6 in year 1. So that one always really hits me. You know, it's talking now about before, even in the last year that the research has changed, it used to be that it was around the age of 8 that girls' confidence really started to drop, where boys didn't, but it's talking about that being younger now, that their confidence is dropping so much. And of course, everything around body image. I read recently that Dove did some research and it said, forgive me, I don't know the exact, it was something in the 80s percent. I don't know if it was 82 or 83%. So forgive me for not knowing exactly. 80 something percent of young teenage girls will edit a photo of their face before they put it on social media.
Gosh.
And over 3/4 of teenage girls will do that. So, you know, I mean, there's so many stats out there that are just screaming that we need to be doing a lot more, a lot earlier with girls because of the impact of gender stereotyping, of the messaging they're hearing from people around them, parents, teachers, books, story, TV. Yeah. So they're just endless, the stats. It's pretty heartbreaking.
And there's a real urgency around it too, isn't there, as you say? Because I think, you know, of course, even when I reflect on the work that we do with Raincheck and trying to, and I'm always very sensitive about, you know, talking about empowering women. I think it's different with young girls, but, you know, ultimately with women, it's saying you already have the power. So all we're trying to do is unlock the power you already have and get you to recognize that and to really feel confident in your decisions, which is a really hard thing to do, of course, when you're carrying the burden of responsibility of everybody's expectations at home, at work, just in society in general. And, you know, when you think about, you know, that particular stat that you shared about girls thinking boys are smarter than them already by the age of six. I mean, you overlay that with research by Cambridge University that says, you know, we form our earliest money habits by the age of seven. So, you know, if you think about the implications of that for everything that comes after that. And, you know, our relationship with money is such an insidious thing. It's not necessarily something that you're thinking about every day, but it impacts you in all of the decisions that you might make in your life. And so it's really important that we're able to unpick at a much earlier age than we currently do. So, you know, obviously I'm talking to the Rainmakers, but I always encourage them, you know, if you've got any young women in your life, your daughters, your nieces, cousins, sisters, you know, godchildren, have the conversation with them as well and just start to understand how their relationship with money might be vastly different from ours, because there is this huge generational gap, even as you pointed to with the fact that, you know, young girls and young women are editing their photos on social media and there are all of these different filters, which is a completely different conversation, but one that I'm just fascinated by because it just speaks to some of the deep-seated things that are, you know, coming in thick and fast, but which are changing the trajectory potentially of young women's lives in terms of how they view themselves. And of course, money is such a big part of our lives, as I say. So, I mean, Abby, from your perspective, when you think about your relationship with money, how would you say that's evolved over time? What are you teaching your children about money?
I mean, I'm still, this is why I need you in my life. It's still a big, it's a difficult one for me. I mean, I always remember my cousin and I, my cousin Chloe and I always remember this comment that my dad made when we were young. She's got a brother too. And he said, your brothers will make money, but don't worry, you'll always be happy. And wow. I know that comes from a loving place. I really do. But it set that tone. I mean, you didn't even need to set it. I mean, you said it to our face, you know, like, so basically you aren't. Money is still a real, I'll be really honest with you. So for the last few years, so when I decided to start Fest of the Girl, I was still on maternity leave with my eldest. And then I went back to, I was working for myself. I sort of went back into the other work that I was doing. But over time, I've done more. I've started to give more of my time to Fest of the Girl. I then had another daughter and on that maternity leave again, could give all my time to Fest of the Girl. But we are still very much trying to bring in the money where we aren't, the three of us don't make an income from doing the festival. Now, mm-hmm. I do believe that will change. I do believe that this festival will grow and trust that that will change. And I'm in an incredibly lucky position where my husband is able to cover our bills. But it's really hard for me to, it's just a really hard one. I think I know the work that I'm doing is really important. Mm-hmm. And I know it's going to grow. But I also know that I give a lot more time at home to taking care of our children. And I do a lot more of the housework, even though at the moment I'm working a lot longer hours than my partner is. But I struggle to find this balance where I believe because I'm not contributing the money, then I need to be doing everything else. When yes. I know that is not the case. And I know that you will understand this and many of the women list will understand this. So I think even though it's a really difficult, I think feel like I'm not giving enough because I'm not bringing in financially, which is madness because of everything that I do around the house and that we don't have to pay for full-time childcare for my youngest because I take off time with her. We don't have to do before and after school clubs for my eldest, you know, so we're financially saving in so many areas because of that. But I still struggle with my worth when it doesn't involve bringing in finances. So basically I'm really working on it. And in regards to my girls, it's an interesting one because I don't actually think we've ever really, obviously Nancy's two, so, but even with Margot, so she's, you know, but actually even with Margot, we don't, you know, obviously she's got her money pot and she could save up to buy, you know, whatever it is she might want to buy. But I guess we've never really had a chat, open chat about who brings money into the house and how those things work. And I wonder what she senses, you know, I wonder what is going in subconsciously. And I will, thanks to you, be reflecting more on maybe the role modeling that I'm doing around money for her. I need to do it for me, really.
You need to do it for you. I mean, you know what's funny? It's like, it's a bit like that fable about the cobbler's children, because I think, you know, the cobbler's children always had holes in their shoes, because I think because of the work that I do, people would just assume that you know, my girls are, you know, we're constantly talking about money and they're little money wizards and they've got their piggy banks and they've got all this stuff. Now, of course, you know, from a very practical perspective, there are certain things that I'm doing on their behalf to make sure that they will be financially secure in later life. So that's, you know, I was very clear about that from the day they were born. And that's something that I think was entrenched early on, because that was my upbringing, you know, having grandparents and aunts and uncles always, you know, putting money on our bank book is what they would say. They put money on our bank book. So that was always something that was really a priority for me when I had the children. But I think sometimes I worry that I'm laying it on too thick, because I think, you know, I'll say to the girls, you know, when they complain, particularly my youngest, who, you know, she'll complain when I have to go to work. And they're just used to me working at home. So, you know, they love to know mommy will pick them up from school and drop them to school in the morning, and that we have that time. And then when they come back from school, we'll do things together, and then mommy will carry on working when they're in bed. Mm-hmm. That to them is their normal, and they are happy with that. But on the days when mommy has to actively go somewhere to work, you know, my youngest really resists that. And I catch a lot of heat from her and saying, well, why do you have to? Why can't you be at home with us? I don't think you should be going out. And I think to myself, and I say to her, do you ask your dad these questions? Because why, you know, I'm just trying to explore with her, why do you think that mommy, now part of it, I don't necessarily think it's because it's girl versus boy in her mind. I think it's just what she's normalized, you know, mommy's always here. So, you know, if you do something different, why are you doing something different?
Yes.
But with my eldest, when I'm trying to explain, and it's funny, the reason I say I'm laying it on a bit thick is when I say to her, you know, what does mommy do? What does Raincheck do? And she'll say, you help women with money. And then I'll say, you know, why is it so important that mommy works? And she'll say, so that you can earn money to buy us things.
Oh, yeah, great.
And I always think, oh, wow, she's like a little robot now. So she knows, because I've said to her when they complain, it's really important that mommy does this work. But I always focus on, you know, what is the thing that's going to make it really real for them? And the only thing that I can come to is, you know, it's so that mommy can buy the things that you like to do and so that you can do your dance class and your swimming lessons and all of these things. Mm. But actually, I think there is something about just saying to them, mommy likes to do this work because it uplifts her, it lifts her spirit. Yeah. You know, there's something about it being more than just the financial benefit, but the other benefits that women get from work, and why it's so disheartening that so many women, particularly after the pandemic, and we saw this kind of great resignation, although that tide is turning now given the cost of living crisis, but so many women being displaced from work just because they couldn't make it work for some of the reasons that you said, you know, trying to shoulder the vast majority of domestic duties and the childcare responsibilities and maybe social care in the community, so helping elderly relatives, for example, as well as trying to, you know, hold down a job. It was simply too much. And then when you think about escalating childcare costs in this country, as you've alluded to, you know, you are saving your family and your household money by shouldering the vast majority of, you know, those childcare responsibilities, at least kind of pre and post school, for example. But, you know, it's really when you think about all of these different things and how it impacts on our relationship with money, and then what you try and tell your daughters, it becomes so complex.
Yeah, it is really complex.
It's not easy, but it is good, but it's important. Absolutely.
And it all starts with awareness. And actually, that's why I'm so glad we've been talking, because I think, although I am aware of my feelings and things about money, I think being more aware of it with regards to how I want to be a role model for my girls is really important. And it's going to, just that awareness is always the first step, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. So, you know, one of the things that we've just touched on then about, you know, work being about more than just the money. You know, when I think about wealth and what wealth means to me as an individual, and certainly, you know, in the conversations that I have with the Rainmakers, you know, through our coaching conversations, I'm trying to normalize the idea of wealth for women so that it doesn't, you know, it's not viewed as something that you can only have if you are in a relationship with someone and that you build it together. Because there are lots of Rainmakers who, whether they're with partners or not, they're building their own financial foundations independently and individually. And that's really important to them.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I like to do is to try and open up the conversation to be, well, wealth manifests itself in a variety of different ways. What does it mean to you? So for some people, it is the financial wealth. Mm-hmm. For others, you know, based on some of the other experiences they might have had, it might be, you know, having emotional wealth and having that peace of mind. What does it look like for you, Abby?
I think for me, wealth at the moment is this the situation that I'm in where I'm doing the work that I love, but I'm also finding time to be with my kids. I think over the summer holidays, I mean, it was very intense because I was working every night, but I was spending the day with my girls. And that was, it was a long 6 weeks for everyone.
But yes.
I know they grow up really fast. And I just think at this point in my life, the wealth for me is finding this balance between doing work that I love and being with my girls. And then I know that as time goes on, as my work takes off more, I know that the wealth will change slightly to become more of an income, which does feel good. It feels good to have money coming into your bank. And I absolutely am very much the party that it's good to have your own independent wealth. I personally think that's really good. And I do want to instill that in my girls as they grow up, that whatever happens, you know, have your own. I'm actually was divorced before I met my partner now. So, you know, I've been there where it's been shared and having to then sort of split it apart, you know. I think having that independence is, it's really, well, it comes back to this word empowering. It's really empowering. But that being said, if you ask me at this point in my life right now, it is what I'm doing. It's having the time with my kids and doing the work that I love that I hope will impact them. That for me as well.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, brilliant response and completely relatable. Of course, in my final question, I have to ask you about making it rain because, you know, from Raincheck's earliest days, I've been talking about how we as women make it rain in all the different ways in our lives. And we don't often celebrate ourselves in the way that we should. And so I always make it a point to ask podcast guests about something that they are particularly proud where they have made it rain in their own lives. Do you have an example of something where, you know, you've managed to, you know, overcome a situation where you've achieved major feats against the odds or just chosen to invest in yourself at a point where people are looking at you like, why are you doing that? And you've done it anyway.
I think, I say it's not personal, but it does feel personal. And I think it would have to be Festival of the Girl. I think I always wanted to work and impact girls and then I had girls. And when I look back at what the three of us have done, working, you know, on this in our free time, especially at the start, you know, when we did the first event on no money and not knowing anything or anyone, it was a real success. And we were all heavily pregnant with our second children.
Oh, wow.
When we then did our second one, we had newborns and it was COVID and we still created a free virtual site that was 2,000 girls signed up to.
Gosh.
And then last year we did virtual again, where it felt even more of a uphill struggle because Laura and Jen's work suddenly picked up loads after COVID and a lot, you know, sort of 90% fell to my plate. But I just kept going. I was like, well, you know, we have to create this. And now we are somehow doing a live event at the Business Design Centre in Islington, which
I know
I can't. I mean, it's less than 4 weeks. I'm like, I can't really believe it. But I think I look at what we've done and I don't often actually, and I should more, because when I look at what I've done, I realize what the three of us have done in the last few years. And I'm really, really proud of us. But so I do get very caught up and then I don't look at it and think, oh my God, what are we doing? This is madness. So thank you for asking, because I think when I reflect back and I also look at some of the organisations that have reached out to us, Like, for example, we had Barbie reach out to us about the work we're doing. I think, oh, I can't believe it. We are three working women and mums trying to do this with our hands full, and yet we've got Barbie coming along. And as it turned out, we didn't work with them in the end, but they still found us and reached out. And you know, and that's just reminders that. Yeah, so I think that's for me. I'm really proud of myself for what I've done and for what I'm doing.
You should be.
Oh,
I mean,
thank
I am
you.
particularly proud to be part of it this year. I think it's
Oh
such a colossal achievement. And I've been following Festival of the Girl for so long and, you know, kind of seeing all of the amazing things that you're doing. And as I say, particularly picking up on some of those stats and just being horrified by them, because of
no.
course I know all of the stats for the financial challenges
Yes.
women face in their adulthood. But, you know, from a confidence perspective, knowing the impact that or some of the obstacles that young girls have and some of the mental barriers that they are being confronted with so early, you know, it really is an incredible achievement. You're doing such wonderful work, and I'm really proud to be a part of it. So,
Good.
we're now going to come on to my quick fire questions, but at the end,
Yes.
please will you, I will ask you, but you know, you can share more about the festival so that people listening can
Okay.
bring their daughters along and take part. So,
Yes, thank you. Will do.
okay, so first question. So, just I'm going to pick three at random.
Okay. Oh, here we go. Okay.
Here we go. So, what's one money lesson you learned early on that you swear by?
Double check if you can do it first. And my reason I say that was when I started my own business, I didn't think I had the vision to create my own website. So I paid a lot of money for this company to do it, and I didn't like it. So I then went off and did it myself and loved it much more. And it was a big
Oh,
lesson that I need to
it is a big lesson.
sometimes we do need to invest into certain areas that we don't know. But for me, I need to take a breath before I do. And really think, can I not do it, or do I just believe I can't do it? And then go from there.
Abby, I'm feeling very seen and very attacked by that point because that's
Oh,
me all the time. Oh my God, the amount of cash that I've hemorrhaged on so-called experts and
I
then found
know.
that I was my own best
Oh,
expert. But anyway,
yes.
brilliant point, brilliant point. Okay, so let's say you're hosting a dinner party. Who would be there and why?
Really good one.
Anybody past, present, living, dead,
I think
as well as, yeah, anyone.
so. I think, do you know, Sandy Toksvig would be there. I think she would be really fun. I think she'd be hilarious, but I also think she'd be fascinating.
Agreed.
I'd like Sophie Walker to be there. She started Women's Equality Party with Sandy Toksvig. So I think they would both be really fascinating women. Who else would I like to have there? There's a wonderful woman whose surname I can't remember now, but I've done some work with. Her name is Nina, and she started the podcast Dope Black Mums. And she is the most
Yes.
fascinating woman I've spoken to. Every time I get to have a glimpse of a chat with her, because she's so busy, it's brilliant. And she did a great podcast for us. I'd love to have her there, just because I'd love to have a cocktail with her. You know, when you're always talking business with people, but you actually
Yes.
think, oh, gosh, I actually think you could be my friend. And I'm going to think of one more person. I mean, there's a few people coming into my head. So I think the other person would be, because I think she's fascinating. I think she is doing a lot for girls and women, but has a the, our, unfortunately, our country has made a decision about her. And that's Meghan Markle. Because I think she's a really interesting person, and I think she's doing a lot for young people. But unfortunately, our country. Actually, yeah, and she could bring Harry too, because I think Harry
Yes,
would
she
be.
could.
I think he
And
would
she's
be
got a
fun.
great podcast as well,
I know.
Archetypes.
I know. I
Yeah, I
haven't
love
listened to it
that.
yet, but I'm going to. I think.
It's really good.
I can imagine. So is that good?
Oh my God, that sounds like a dazzling dinner
Ah!
party.
Can you
Yeah.
come too? Can you come
I'll come
too?
too. Absolutely. Okay,
Yes.
so my final question. Let's say money is no object.
Okay.
What are you blowing the budget on?
Oh my goodness, that's great. So I'd tell them two things popped into my head. I'd say the thing that popped into my head first, and that was getting all my best mates and hiring, or I don't think that's the right word, but when it's a massive yacht, and just go and do just go on this, like, you know, the yachts. Well, I mean, they cost like millions.
Yes.
And we just go on a fabulous yachting holiday. I
Oh my
mean, that
God,
would be,
amazing.
but then my second thing was, yes, but you could also get the house done. You know, there's lots, like,
Oh God.
there's like wallpaper peeling off the things. That's my where I went. Second, I was like, no, Abby, go with the yacht, not doing
Go
the
with the yacht.
house.
I mean, do the house too, but
Well,
yeah,
I've
the yacht
got that much money,
first.
I'll do them both.
Yeah.
Yes, so I'll go on a yacht, please.
Brilliant, brilliant. Let's try and manifest
Yeah,
that.
okay.
So, Abby, thank you so much for your time today. I feel like we could talk all afternoon, but I'd like you to share with us where people can find you
Okay.
and find out more about Festival of the Girl.
Absolutely. So we are festofthegirl.com. We are Fest of the Girl on Instagram and Facebook, Twitter, which I must admit we are rarely on. I can't do too many things like that.
Same.
Is I know Festival of Girl. But basically, if you look up Fest of the Girl, you'll find us. And our live event is Sunday, the 9th of October. It's at the Business Design Centre in Islington. And just go onto our website and you can see the lineup. You can see where to get the tickets. And we have done our best to make the tickets as reasonable as possible for everyone to be able to come. We are also, for those who can't come on the 9th, we are creating an activity book. We've done this the last couple of years, but we're putting even more into it this year. And they're free. So if you go onto our website, you can sign up so your daughter or son could receive a free activity book in the post, hopefully before International Day of the Girl. Get ourselves together. And we'll have some live, not live, sorry, but we'll have some free activity videos that we'll also share. So it's sort of a mini virtual festival that's free and accessible for everyone that can get to a computer and internet. But the activity pack, which, like I said, all you have to do is give us your address and it's free. And it doesn't need to be done with the videos, but it can be. So I just really encourage people to just check us out because we're doing our best to get as much together and make it as free and accessible as possible so as many people can benefit from it.
Amazing. Abby, thank you so much. I hope
Thank
to
you.
see many, many rainmakers listening to this at the
Oh, that'd
festival.
be wonderful. Well, they can come and see you. Are you going to
Exactly,
be there?
exactly. I can't wait.
Thank you.
But thank you so much for your time. Enjoy the
Thank
rest of
you.
your afternoon.
You too. Take care.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips, and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck and don't forget to share, like, rate, review, and subscribe. See you next time. Thank you.